I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
From the Times and the Sunday Times, this is The Story. I'm Luke Jones.
Mr. Speaker, in the early part of last week, Professor Blunt was publicly identified as having been a suspect Soviet agent.
Winter 1979, and Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher is in the House of Commons outing a traitor.
Professor Blunt has said that during his period in the security service from 1940 to 1945, he regularly passed to Russian intelligence anything that came his way which would be of interest to them.
She confirmed rumours that Anthony Blunt, a man who had once been the Queen's private art curator, had been a Soviet spy, one of what we now call the Cambridge Five. Bright, young, middle-class things recruited by the KGB at university in the 1930s.
I believed it was the right thing in the cause of anti-fascism. I now realise bitterly that this was totally wrong.
The full extent of what the Five did isn't known, but could Blunt in particular have been more dangerous than we thought?
He was the most intelligent and resourceful of the Cambridge Five and was clearly doing a lot more than the history books tell us about.
The story today, the thinker, traitor, soldiers, and a spy.
My name is Robert Verkek. I'm a journalist and author, and I've been writing about military history for 5 years.
September 1944, only a few months after the victorious landings on D-Day in northern France, the Allied forces had a new, ambitious mission, an offensive on German-occupied Netherlands.
The British Field Marshal Bernard Montgomery, our most successful general, came up with this idea of an air landing behind enemy lines, which would capture key bridges over the Rhine, outflank the German Siegfried Line defences, and cross into Germany, occupy the Ruhr, heart of the industrial Nazi war machine, and then move on to capture Berlin. And so Operation Market Garden was the biggest airborne operation ever undertaken.
But Operation Market Garden was a disaster. And one of the many reasons why was an intelligence leak.
And everything had to go right for this to work. Absolutely everything. They had to be at their rendezvous points. They had to capture the bridges all at the right time. And, you know, the Germans weren't allowed to interfere with the progress of the operation. But of course, this was not the case. The intelligence was completely misread. There were significant Nazi war machine divisions in the Arnhem area, actually. And the British, who were responsible for capturing the last bridge, Arnhem, landed bang right on top of them. And this was the reason why I think that Operation Market Garden failed.
If Operation Market Garden had succeeded, Robert thinks the whole Second World War could have played out differently. It might have ended before Christmas in 1944. The Allies could have got to Berlin before the Soviets. course, what happened instead was the conflict dragged on for months, and the Soviets captured Berlin in May 1945. Robert was rifling through documents about all this in the National Archives in Kew, the operation, the failures, and the intelligence leak.
So, 2 days before Market Gardener, a German spy in Stockholm received a microdot file which contained the precise details of Market Gardener. It included the names of the units involved. It said exactly where these divisions were to be deployed, and it gave the ultimate objective of the operation, i.e. Arnhem. And this was fed back to Berlin. And the name of the agent was Josephine. The British had been watching Josephine for some time because Bletchley Park had managed to decrypt some of the intelligence that she had been passing on to the Germans. So they were aware of her, but they didn't know who she was. It was only later, after the war, that it transpired that her intelligence reached the Germans at a critical moment in the battle. Now, very few people knew about the operations. You couldn't find this out in sort of in casual conversation.
Yeah.
You needed to be a member of senior military staff or part of the intelligence establishment.
And so the assumption would be then that this would be someone who was a German mole somewhere high in the ranks, as you say, of one of the Allied forces involved in the planning of Operation Market Garden. And yet, when you started following this trail in the archives, you made a discovery which actually shed a bit more light on the identity of who Josephine could be.
It turns out that Josephine was run by a named German spy called Dr. Karl-Heinz Kramer, who was operating from Stockholm. So from the file, you know that Josephine is giving her intelligence to Kramer, whose reports are probably the best intelligence reports that the Nazis received at this time during the war. They were read by Hitler. Alfred Jodl, the chief of staff of German army, believed he was the best spy that the Germans had. So it's possible to link Josephine to Kramer. The only question is, who was Josephine? Well, it turns out that Kramer didn't even know who Josephine was. All he knew was there was this agent who he received intelligence from through a fairly circuitous route, through another one of his agents. But if you read the files, you can see that MI6 were convinced that Josephine must be a mole at the heart of British intelligence, or a heart of the heart of military establishment. MI5, who was charged with investigating and identifying Josephine, were not convinced.
You mentioned that MI5 were the ones who were tasked with actually trying to shake out who Josephine was. And interestingly, the person charged with doing that at MI5 was Anthony Blunt. And many people will now know of him, obviously, as being famously a Russian double agent. He was one of the Cambridge spies, obviously. Remind us who they were and who he was.
Yeah, so Anthony Blunt was working at MI5 around this time. He was one of the Cambridge Five. He'd been recruited in the 1930s by the Russian intelligence service, along with the other four, more famously perhaps Kim Philby, Donald MacLean, Guy Burgess and John Cancross. These were members of the British upper middle classes, really, who'd studied at Cambridge and who had, for perhaps idealistic reasons, decided to work for the Russians and were convinced that communism had something that capitalism didn't. So by working for the Russians, Blunt thought he was working for the greater good.
Yes, he was achingly posh, it seems, and very well connected.
He was. He was the son of a Hampshire vicar who'd married a cousin of the Queen. But he was also extraordinarily intelligent. He was a brilliant linguist. He was a brilliant mathematician, but perhaps more, he was better known for his art history. By the start of the Second World War, he was, you know, a world-renowned art historian. And, you know, he had extraordinarily good contacts in the British establishment, which helped him to get a job in MI5.
And during the war, and as the Second World War started, he was quite quickly in very important, sensitive positions, despite, by this point, as you say, being already a spy for the Russians.
He's, you know, a meteoric rise to success and high rank within MI5. He began as assistant to the head of MI5's counterintelligence, but very shortly he was in charge of liaising between MI5 and MI6 in terms of the sharing of secret intelligence, some of it from Bletchley Park. He was the officer who was in charge of writing MI5's monthly reports to the Prime Minister, Winston Churchill. Mm. But more significantly, in terms of the story, he was the officer who was in charge of Triplex, which was a extremely controversial operation, which involved the surveillance of foreign or neutral diplomats working in London and all their correspondence. So he would be seeking this correspondence out of the building or opening it and reading it. It was highly unlawful, and also sometimes planting material in the correspondence. So he was an extraordinarily effective and influential British spy.
And the fact that he was, throughout this period, a Russian mole, it isn't something new. I mean, people remember this even being dramatised in The Crown on Netflix. He pops up in Series 3.
Take our bearded trickster here. A Venetian card sharp originally ascribed to Titian, until new evidence came to light proving the painting is actually by Lorenzo Lotto. As time passes, so we learn.
It's been a known quantity for years. That's what he had been secretly up to.
Yeah. During the Second World War, he handed over something like 1,700 documents, British secret documents, to Moscow. He was the agent who told Moscow about the D-Day landings. You know, whilst the Russians were our allies, he didn't want the Russians blowing it to the Americans, but it was Blunt who told them that. After the war, he was so well regarded that he became surveyor to the King's pictures, you know, a job that he continued with Queen Elizabeth II until he was outed as a Russian spy in 1964.
And then actually finally publicly, what, more than a decade later even?
Yeah, so in 1964, MI5 managed to secure a very limited confession from him, and they did a deal with him. For his confession, he was promised that he would not be prosecuted under the Official Secrets Act for his crimes, basically because he didn't really have the evidence apart from his confession. But it wasn't until, and this was kept hush-hush, it wasn't until 1979 when Margaret Thatcher found out about his treachery, that is still positioned as surveyor of the Queen's pictures, that she decided to make his treachery public.
We do not know exactly what information he passed. We do know, however, to what information he had access by virtue of his duties. There is no doubt that British interests were seriously damaged by his activities.
And that's when everybody else found out about it.
So it's fascinating, Robert, that we've got basically a Russian double agent at the top of, or very near the top of MI5 counterintelligence during the war. We've got this unknown double agent who has leaked devastating intelligence to Germany, Josephine, who we don't know who they are. And as is the way, the person who has to try and sniff them out is Anthony Blunt. And he proves quite useless at it, which is, how would you describe? Would you say that's suspicious?
He suggests that the source of Josephine is a Swedish diplomat called Frank Savell, who has been loose-lipped in the past, but you know is unlikely to have had access to the kind of military intelligence that Josephine was sending on to the Germans. But he pursues this, but it transpires quite quickly that Savell can't possibly be Josephine, because Josephine, during D-Day, is passing on intelligence that only a handful of British officers would be privy to. So the Swedish diplomat link is blown out of the water at this point. So the idea that Blunt was you know, investigating a German spy, but not really investigating it properly, offering up very unbelievable, uncredible candidates for Josephine just made me think the whole thing stunk. And what was Blunt really up to?
Coming up, what exactly was Anthony Blunt up to and why? More from Robert in a moment.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Anthony Blunt, a person who we now know was a Russian double agent, is the person at MI5 who is tasked with trying to find out who Josephine is. You said he was putting in quite a sort of limp effort and even suggesting up other people. Meanwhile, MI6 were actually made something of a breakthrough as trying to understand who Josephine is.
MI6 have got an officer in Stockholm called Peter Falk, who has befriended the housekeeper working for Karl-Heinz Kramer and his wife. So Kramer is the spy master in Stockholm who picks up the reports from Josephine. And the housekeeper has fallen out with the Kramers because they're very haughty, snooty. They look down on the housekeeper and she's taken against them. And Peter Falk makes friends with her, so has access to Kramer's office. And more importantly, the housekeeper manages to get a copy of the key, which opens the safe. Falk has now got access to Kramer's safe and all the documents in it. And what he finds is that a lot of the material that Josephine and Kramer have got hold of has sort of a Russian element to it. Some of it contains information about possible deals being done between the British and Americans and the Germans towards the end of the war. You know, these have much sort of wider implications for World War II. And he's so concerned about this that he decides to take the papers to London. So he comes to London and he seeks out MI5 and he meets Anthony Blunt in the Reform Club, where he discusses his fears about Josephine, Kramer and the Russians with Blunt, and he says he thinks something's going on. But according to Falk, who wrote this in his
unpublished memoirs. Blunt loses his temper. He completely, and this is a man not known for bouts of emotion. He completely loses it. He says, you know, don't start asking about the Russians. Don't you worry. None of this material looks like it's come from the Russians. It's something else. I'll look after it. You go back to Stockholm and carry on. Keep me informed. But Blunt, of course, doesn't do any of this. He keeps all this to himself. And it's only later that we realise just how significant this moment is.
And then there's another point at which arguably Blunt could have got closer to the truth as to who Josephine was. After the war, shortly after the war in 1945, and after D-Day, where Karl-Heinz Kramer, who was the person who you explained, who was sort of ran Josephine as an agent, or even though he'd never met her, the documents would come to him and then he'd pass them on up to the German authorities. He was actually arrested and interrogated, but surprise, surprise, that interrogation doesn't seem to go anywhere.
Yes, this is a major development in terms of the Josephine investigation, because May 1945, the British capture Kramer in Germany and bring him back to London and put him in a detention camp known as Camp 020, which is where all the senior Nazis were interrogated during and after the war. And the man that they put in charge of the interrogation, or the man they put in charge of overseeing the interrogation, is Anthony Blunt. When MI6 suggests that there's a link between Moscow and Josephine, Blunt simply says, you're flogging a dead horse there. I'd forget that. You know, time and time again, when evidence or intelligence emerges or suspicions are raised about Josephine's link to the Russians, Blunt closes it down.
Could the suspected German spy Josephine have a link to Moscow? MI5's Anthony Blunt, who we know at this point was a Russian mole, seemingly shuts down any investigation of this line of inquiry. Is that because it doesn't make any sense? Why would a Nazi spy also be helping the Soviets? Or is there something else going on?
After D-Day, 1944, when it's clear that it's such a success, the Normandy landing success, that the British and Americans have the Germans on the run, and the British and Americans will soon be in Berlin. The whole World War landscape dramatically changes. And Stalin now has a problem. He knows he's going to beat the Germans, but he wants to make sure that he reaches Berlin before the Allies, because by getting to Berlin, he will be able to determine the political landscape post-war. Soviet influence will stretch right from the Russian borders into Eastern Europe. And that is his ultimate goal.
So even though the assumption has been that Josephine was a German spy because she supplied intelligence which allowed the Germans to prevail at Operation Market Garden, actually you're saying, if you look at this also maps onto what Stalin would want to see happen. The leaks that the Germans got from Josephine actually also suit Stalin's purposes. So it's conceivable that Josephine was actually a Russian spy who was conveniently handing over things to a German handler to get that information to the top of the Third Reich.
Exactly. It was extraordinarily useful intelligence that arrived in the nick of time in terms of the Germans' defence at Arnhem. And it served the interests of the Russians as much as it served the interests of the Nazis, who were all but defeated at this point.
And of course, it wasn't just Anthony Blunt who was having to look into this, and it's not just you now in your research who's been looking into this. Actually, MI5 did actually do a chunky report into the Josephine question years later in the 1970s, 300 pages worth, which was actually declassified and you got your hands on it and had a read of it. Even that didn't get to the bottom of who Josephine was. Did that make you more suspicious?
If I was still trying to make sense of what was going on, having read the Kramer reports and Blunt's interrogation of Kramer, the Pat McCullum report, this was the MI5's inquiries into into Josephine, and specifically the Arnhem betrayal. Her conclusion is that we can't possibly know who Josephine is. It's a mystery. She says, you know, MI6 believed it to be someone in the heart of British intelligence or part of British establishment. MI5 and Anthony Blunt thought differently. MI5 thought that he was largely making it up at some points. It was guesswork, which seems ridiculous given the...
How successful it was.
The precision and detail. But there's something else about McCullen report. So she's looking at it and she's talking about the officers, the MI5 officers who are investigating. And she mentions Major Blunt on several occasions. He crops up time and time again in her report. But not once does she say, Anthony Blunt, of course, as we know now. Remember, this report was done in the 1970s. As we know now, was a Russian agent whose ultimate responsibilities were to the Kremlin, not to British intelligence. But she treats him as if he's sort of bona fide British officer doing, you know, best possible job in the world to uncover the identity of Josephine. And that struck me as the most extraordinary thing of all, because why would you not acknowledge or at least pursue the possibility that was not doing a very good job of investigating?
And so what was your conclusion then?
I decided to write down all the reasons why I thought Josephine was Blunt, or Blunt had planted the intelligence around Arnhem on Kramer, and Kramer had sent it on to Berlin. And I came up with 50 reasons why Josephine was Blunt and therefore has blood on his hands.
And some of your 50 reasons for that being the case was he was in exactly the kind of position where he'd have the intelligence that he could pass on to the Germans on Arnhem. He clearly and demonstrably dragged his feet on trying to uncover who Josephine was in his MI5 investigations. And as well, even we know he was a Russian double agent, and the intelligence he was passing on to the Germans time and time again was perfectly convenient for the Russians.
Exactly. He had motive, means, and opportunity. He was one of the few intelligence officers who had access to the Arnhem plans. He had motive because he was a Russian agent, not a British agent. He was serving the interests of the Kremlin. He had opportunity because he was in charge of the diplomatic bags that were being surveilled by MI5. And this was how Kramer received his Josephine Arnhem report. This was through the diplomatic bags.
Yeah.
I think one of the more interesting ones was the fact that Kramer said he received the intelligence, the Arnhem intelligence, in a micro dot, which is a micro photographed collection of documents on almost sort of pinprick. And MI5's expert in micro dot technology was Anthony Blunt. I mean, the coincidences just keep on building.
And yet what I don't understand, Robert, what I don't understand is how, after all what we know he did for the Russians, what it's clear, or it seems very likely he did for the Russians through passing on information to the Germans on something like this, he managed to die peacefully and free in his house in Highgate in North London, and was largely seen by people around him at the time as, you know, yes, he'd done some traitorous things, but he was, as you said earlier, you know, there's a sense that he'd done it for ideological reasons. It was for a greater good. He was, you know, some people suggesting he was trying to stop fascism. That was his thing in supporting Stalin. How did he manage that?
Well, perhaps that was the greatest trick of all, was pulling the wool over our eyes in terms of what his intentions were and how benign they really were. I mean, the truth is, we don't know what Blunt did during the war. You know, all we know is that, and this is according to the limited release of the archives in Moscow, we know that he handed over 1,700 documents. We don't know exactly what was in them. We know something about them. And And apart from that, all we know is what he said in his confession, which was extraordinarily limited. And MI5, after securing the confession, said that he was holding back an awful lot of intelligence.
I believed it was the right thing in the cause of anti-fascism. I now realise bitterly that this was totally wrong.
So you do have regrets?
Oh, yes. Bitter.
What will you do now?
I hope to be able to go back and do some work on art history.
We only know what he told us, and he's clearly not going to reveal the extent of his treachery. And so he was able to, you know, build a reputation after the war of this this erudite art historian who was close to the royal family, who made a mistake in the Second World War, had backed the wrong horse for ideological reasons. But really, please don't look any further into what he got up to, because that's not the picture he wanted painted of his wartime exploits.
Mm.
But I think that he was the most intelligent and resourceful of the Cambridge Five, and was clearly doing a lot more than the history books tell us about.
Well, as you write in your piece, he was someone who is widely seen to be one of the most sort of ineffective and least deadly of the Cambridge spies. But actually, he's arguably the most deadly.
If he was Josephine, then he was responsible for the deaths of tens of thousands of British, American and Polish soldiers who fought in Arnhem. And Josephine's intelligence was not just the betrayal of Arnhem. She also gave intelligence about the Rhine crossing to the Germans in 1945, start of 1945. He also managed to get hold of intelligence about the American landings in the Philippines, which, if it had been handed to the Japanese in time, would have cost thousands of lives of American servicemen. So the scale of his treachery is much broader than we are prepared to acknowledge, and perhaps we should start acknowledging it now.
Robert Verkaig, the author of The Traitor of Arnhem. You can get a copy of his book at timesbookshop.co.uk, and there is a discount if you're a Times Plus member. You can also find Robert's Sunday Times piece online as well. thetimes.co.uk is where you can find that. The producers today were Priyanka Daladia and Olivia Case. The executive producers are Kate Ford and Fiona Leach. And sound design is by John Scott. Do leave us a nice review on whatever app you're listening to us on. It's always very helpful. Goodbye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.